get born. It happened of itself. This is Zinyan. And so this word means nature. Dai Zinyan, or the Japanese pronounce it Shizen, is roughly when they point to all the things happening around us, that's Zinyan. And you see that Zinyan, that which is so of itself implies no boss. So in the same way, they would look at the human body. Zhuangzi discusses the human body and says, which organ do you prefer? And it shows there is no chief organ. There could be an argument between the brain and the stomach. One school of thought would say, well, obviously the stomach is the most important organ because that's where the food goes and is distributed to everywhere else. And stomachs came first. Then later, on the upper end of the input channel to the stomach, there were evolved ganglia of nerves to enable the stomach better to scratch around for things to put into it. And therefore, the brain serves the stomach. The other school of thought would say, well, no, it isn't that things which come first aren't necessarily the most important. The stomach is to the brain, as John the Baptist was to Jesus. The stomach is there, but to nourish the brain. The stomach is the servant of the brain, which is, of course, preoccupied with higher things that we call culture. But you see, both arguments will stand up and both will fail. Because the stomach and the brain have a mutuality between each other. They arise mutually. And there is no way of deciding which of the major organs of the body is top dog. Because the body is a sort of democracy in which, by mutual cooperation, things happen without any preconceived plan. We think in the West that the order of nature has a plan underneath it, that there was, as it were, the original blueprint in the mind of God, which is the Logos, the second person of the Trinity. But the Chinese don't think that way. They would agree with the limerick. Well, I mean, they wouldn't, but they would agree with the humor of it. There was a young man who said, damn, for it certainly seems that I am a creature that moves in determinate grooves. I'm not even a bus, I'm a tram. But the Chinese do not think of any rails laid down, as it were, or rules laid down, upon which nature has to travel. They think simply that it organizes itself, but doesn't know how. Again, we're back to the centipede, which manages 100 legs without thinking, because thinking would embarrass it. That sort of thing is called in Chinese putting legs on a snake, you see. A snake needs no legs. And explaining the universe by a governor who dominates it is called legs on a snake. It's like saying we have an instinct to do this, that, and the other. When people talk about instincts, watch out. They're invoking ghosts. When we say we have an instinct to survive, it means simply that we do survive, in fact, until we don't. And if you want to explain the curious fact that people seem to want to survive, you call it an instinct to survive. And this is learned gobbledygook. There was a time sometimes when you showed a physician or a scientist some peculiar thing which he didn't understand. He would look at it, put on his spectacles, examine it from various points of view and make a few notes, and then say, it is a lusus naturae. And everybody said, wonderful. He knows what it is, a lusus naturae. But it means it is a game of nature, a freak. And you will find that many, many medical people practice this sort of gobbledygook. You have a pain. They say it's neuritis. It means simply that neuritis means your nerves hurt. So, it's always good to translate medical language back into English, and you begin to get some idea of what's happening. Now, the next thing to take up is the word de. And as I said, this means virtue, power, sometimes magic. When we say a person is a virtuoso, we have something of the meaning of de in it. Marvelous accomplishment. And in opening the section on de, Lao Tzu says, superior virtue is not virtue, and thus is virtue. Inferior virtue cannot let go of virtue, and thus is not virtue. Or we might say, a person who really has virtue is not striving for virtue, and thus really has it. A person of inferior virtue is so trying to be virtuous that he's not virtuous. In other words, when the person is trying and striving for virtue, he is being self-conscious and artificial. And we say, well, so-and-so is very good, but isn't he rather forced? Isn't he a bit phony? And it's so often the case that people who are reputedly very virtuous are very boring. You feel that sometimes people are so good that you are sitting on the edge of your chair in their presence, and that you can't relax with them or let your hair down, because they are full of judgment and disapproval, because they are always judging and disapproving of themselves. A really virtuous person doesn't show his virtue. He is like, well, there's a poem in Chinese which says, entering the forest, he doesn't disturb a blade of grass. Entering the water, he doesn't make a ripple. He looks very ordinary. And so his virtue can't be detected. He doesn't stink of virtue. So, de, then, is the virtue of the great artist, say, or craftsman, who creates marvelous works of art, but always as if he was making no effort. And so we say of great art that it's artless, that it seems to come naturally, that he does it as if he were falling off a log. Now, of course, we know that it isn't that simple. But nevertheless, it does seem to be. So what everybody wants to know then is how to acquire that great naturalness in everything, so that we, in our human lives, manifest the Tao. Tao manifested through man is De. How do you do it? So the transitional word, which shows the way to realize De in one's life, and then with this character, this is pronounced, this one is Wu, and this one is Wei, Wu Wei. Wei means to act, to strain, to strive, or to interfere. And so the Taoist manner of life is Wu Wei. Don't force it. Always go with the stream. You may need to use a rudder, but don't ever go against the stream. If you are swimming and you're caught in a very strong current, you'll be lost if you try to swim against it. You must swim with it and edge to the side. That's Wu Wei. This has been very well understood even by the samurai in Japan. who, when they became very great, real masters of swordsmanship, always found out and belonged to the no-sword school, because the real master of the sword never uses one. There is a story that there were in Japan in ancient times two master swordsmiths, and there was a great debate as to which of them was the better. So some soldiers took a sword made by each master and decided to test them out. They first took a sword made by the man who, in general opinion, was perhaps a little inferior. And they went to a stream, and they dipped the sword in the stream with the edge of the blade facing upstream. They dropped a piece of paper on the stream, and it floated towards the sword, and as it floated, the sword simply divided it in two. The two pieces of paper joined together on the other side and went on down the stream. They then took the blade of the man reputed perhaps to be the greatest master and thought, well, it'd be pretty difficult to improve on that. But we'll try it anyway. So they gave the same test. But as the piece of paper approached the sword, it moved over to one side, skirted it altogether, and went on. So the true master will never have to be in a fight. And for that reason, Aikido, as a athletic technique, is learning how to be unattackable, is to always avoid the fight. And so, however hard people strike at you, they will always be hitting the air. That's de, you see, that's magical power. But it all comes about through not using effort, not straining at anything, never strain. Like you never force a key in a lock, you'll just bend the key. You jiggle and jiggle and jiggle until it turns smoothly. Or put oil on it or something. But never force it. Same way, when you use your eyes, don't stare at anything in order to see it clearly. Because you'll just tire your eyes and make the image fuzzy. If you want to see the time on a distant clock, you close your eyes. You imagine black and relax your eyes. Then look at the clock, lazily, and you will see that the detail is clearer. So when you sing, you mustn't force your voice. Once upon a time, a great choir master was in the presence of William Temple, one time Archbishop of Canterbury, teaching a group of slum children how to sing. And he asked them first to sing some song with which they were all familiar. And wanting to impress the archbishop, they sang it very lustily in a forced way, and it sounded terrible. Now, he said, I want to show you something. There was present on this occasion a trained choir. And he said, now, we're going to sing with this choir a song you people don't know, but listen to it. And the choir sang it very professionally. The choir master then turned to the group and said, now, look, when you sing this song, the one thing you must not do is to try to sing it. You just think of the tune and let it sing itself. And they sang and did it very well. And he turned to the archbishop from whom I had the tale and said, that's good theology, isn't it, Your Grace? Now that's Taoism. That's Wu Wei. And so now there's another story with which I will exemplify this. Later than Lao Tzu, there was another Taoist sage called Lietze. And he had the reputation of being able to ride on the wind. Of course, that's metaphorical. We say walking on air. Walking on air, never a care. Something is making me sing, you know. And so when Suzuki was asked what it's like to have the experience of Satori or enlightenment, he once said, it is like ordinary everyday experience, except it's about 2 inches off the ground, where you don't feel burdened by your own body, where you don't feel you were something that you have to lug around and hold a club over and generally boss. So the sense of lightness, that's the meaning of Lietza being able to walk on the air. But he told a story of how he managed to do it. He said he went to a great guru, and this guru paid no attention to him. So he just sat outside the door of his hut. And a year went by, and still this man paid no attention to him. So Lietza went away, disgusted. But then he thought it over a bit and realized this man had a terrific reputation, and that if perhaps he had been a little bit more patient, he would have had some teaching. So he went back. And the great sage looked at him and said, "Why this ceaseless coming and going?" So he sat down again at the entrance of the hut, and for a further year attempted to control his mind in such a way as never to think of profit or loss or advantage or disadvantage. And then at the end of that year, the teacher looked at him. For another year he practiced, and at the end of that, the teacher invited him to come in the hut and sit on the mat. Then for the next year, however, he did something quite different, and he says this: "I let my eyes see whatever they wanted to look at. I let my ears hear whatever they wanted to hear. I let my mouth say whatever it wanted to say, and I let my mind think whatever it wanted to think." And at the end of that year, I didn't know what was subject and what was object. I didn't take any account of time. I was riding on the wind, but I didn't really know whether the wind was riding on me or I was riding on the wind. And this was when he got to float, you see. But see what he finally did. He allowed democracy to prevail. He said to his eyes, "I'm not going to try and control you. You know better how to see than I do." To his ears, "I'm not going to force you to listen to anything. You know how to hear better than I can direct you." And so on for everything. He trusted his own brain. He trusted his own organism. This is Wu Wei. So in exactly the same way, if you practice meditation, don't try to meditate. Like the choir was told not to try to sing. Don't force it. When you meditate, let your lungs breathe the way they want to breathe. Let your mind think anything it wants to think about. Don't try to repress thoughts. Let your eyes see whatever they're looking at. And let your ears, your eardrums vibrate to any oscillations there may be in the air. Let go. You think that's very risky. It isn't. It really isn't. It's like a ship in a typhoon. They always shut the engines off and drift. Because if